You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Thursday morning, so it's time for Shapiro World, which is slightly late because normally we speak to David Shapiro on a Monday afternoon, but he has gone off to the Antipodes, Australasia, to see his family. And so, good day, mate. I hope I've caught you before you put another shrimp on the barbie. David, sorry to interrupt your holiday and everything, but I think we need to speak because I sense from your tweets and from a couple of chats we've had off air that you are incredibly frustrated and also quite upset about what's happening with Eskom.
You know, Lindsay, I know that the headlines are coming out that this is sabotage and they've been able to identify a person who's disconnected whatever it was, instruments at a power station, which I would assume is Medupi, causing the issues. Now, you know, I'm not sure what the background to that is, but whatever it is, I mean, it's totally disrupted South Africa. And it came at a time when we're trying to digest what's going to happen to SAA. You know, I can't see them surviving. I think it's going to cause very deep political issues when the business rescue partner, what do you call him, head, you know, whoever's running it, which is Les Mattison, has to make some very serious decisions. There's going to be some kind of backlash and outcry. And we're suddenly now dealing with issues that I think are far worse than everyone expected. And I think that's what's bringing down not only sentiment, but has really tippled those people, or as you said, you know, just pushed over the edge from where we are, and almost causing a sense of no hope or hopelessness, you know, that there is no way out. So that's what we're dealing with. People are just kind of almost giving up and throwing in the towel, because if we have to keep facing these issues, you know, which is holiday season comes and every day you're out for 4 hours. Lindsay, you're not experiencing it, but this continual load shedding has an enormous impact on your life and frustrating you just in your daily life. And I think that's where my sentiments are coming from.
Yes, so in other words, something that people in Europe, for example, would take for granted, i.e. going out and being able to sit in a cafe or a restaurant and where the lights are on and the power is on and the kitchens are working, is not a part of daily life occasionally in South Africa. And although it sounds sort of elitist, and a vast majority of the South African population hasn't had service delivery for many, many years, the point is that it still does disrupt, and everybody suffers if there's that sort of disruption.
Yeah, we don't have to judge ourselves by the lowest common denominator. In other words, we should be raising the bar, not lowering the bar. You know, that's the point. We can't keep going back and saying, oh, well, you know, most of the population have never been here. That's not where you want to be.
Yes.
You don't want to retrogress. You actually want to bring forward a nation. You know, you want to catch up with the rest of the world. And all that it does is take us down. And when I heard that the mines have, had to stop production for fear of being caught underground or various other issues that would result if you had this load shedding that was going on to stage six, which basically closes down the whole country, then you know what trouble we're in. In any case, I think we're going to suffer the consequences. So this will be another recessionary year, and it sets a very low level of growth for next year. And we can't keep growing at below 1%. You know, we need to be growing at well above 2-3%, or even much higher than that. And that's where the frustration's coming. I just live there. My job doesn't require a huge amount of electricity. You know, I could run on batteries, the kind of job that I do. You know, but
me too.
But we lead very simple lives. We're talking on a phone now, and that's about the full technology that we need. But if you've got machinery going, and you're running a restaurant, a shop, a factory, whatever it is, and it also comes at a time now where you're trying to get orders out because factories close on the weekend. So you're trying to get those last-minute orders out, and suddenly you're faced with this load shedding. So for an imposer to say, oh, no, there's going to be no load shedding from the 17th or whatever it is, which will be Tuesday next week right through to mid-January, is very easy because that's when the factories are closed.
Right.
There's going to be no demand. You understand? I mean, virtually the whole of industrial South Africa closes down, so it's very easy for them to say that. And I'm sure they're shipping in transformers or, driven by diesel. I'm sure that those are coming in. But it really is a serious situation. And I can't stress that, you know, strong enough.
Talking about raising the bar, we maybe come back to that later on if you've got the time. But anyway, let's have a look at what happened last night in the United States of America, because the U.S. Federal Reserve's Federal Open Market Committee came to its decision after a two-day meeting. And here's something I've just seen. It says the U.S. dollar remains on the back foot after Jerome Powell, chairman of the U.S. Federal Reserve, clarified that his personal bar for raising rates is high. He wants to see significant and persistent inflation before hiking. Mm-hmm. And earlier, the Fed left rates unchanged as expected and signaled no changes in 2020. Mm-hmm. No changes in, I mean, how can they look ahead? Because they've misled us before.
I agree with you. I agree. Remember this year, this time last year, this was a time when they were going to raise rates, and that knocked the market into a complete stupor. We fell 20%, I think, from October last year to the beginning of January. I think it was a massive fallout. And then they turned around and said, okay, we're not going to. In fact, we're going to reduce rates, which they did three times, and now they're saying that they're not going to raise rates. So I agree with you. I think they don't have to say that. You know, I would prefer what they used to say before. They will just keep looking at the data. But
data,
I mean, to say that they're not going to react. Exactly.
Exactly.
You know, we can live from quarter to quarter. It's quite okay. So I'm with you in that sense. I don't think we have to sketch out as far as the end of next year, because you have absolutely no idea. You know, what can happen, and particularly in a volatile political environment.
Listen to this. Shares of Saudi Aramco surged to 38.7 riyals apiece, or $10.32, in their second day of public trading, pushing the kingdom's record IPO to a gargantuan $2 trillion valuation and hitting Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's long-held target for the company. Now, that tells you in that first paragraph what's going on. They listed and the Saudis bought in order to get it to $2 trillion, because it's a badge of honor. It's like having the tallest skyscraper in the Middle East. That is what they wanted. They wanted $2 trillion, and they want to say to the Qataris and to people in Dubai, look what we can do in Saudi Arabia, and to the world, this is who we are. We are now bigger than the five biggest oil companies combined.
Yeah. Well, you see, it doesn't make sense, because they went out and tested the market, and they tested the market at a higher price. Nobody was buying, and therefore what they did is lowered the price, but they reduced the amount of shares on offer, which is really a pitiful number. I mean, it's less, 1.5% of the company or thereabouts, and that. So there's no doubt that some friendly forces have come in and helping this one along. Otherwise, if it was such a grab, you know, people would have gone in before that. Institutions globally would have just snapped up shares. Listen, no doubt it's a very profitable company, but you've got an oil price which is extremely difficult now to forecast. There's a glut of oil. I don't think there's any shortage of oil. So I think you've got to be slightly cautious or suspicious about the movements that we're seeing now.
Very, very suspicious indeed. It's not the time for you to be analysing day-to-day movements, because you're with your family and you're having fun over there. Just briefly give us an idea of the mood in Australia at the moment, because of the, I think the main thing, I mean, apart from the little island near to you, New Zealand, and the volcanic eruption, I think the main thing is these wildfires. And every single year I think to myself, it's not unusual. Every single year it gets worse and worse and worse. Something that can be done, clearing the forests or something. I don't know.
You know, one of the, and I'm merely reflecting. I'm not going to comment. By comment is I'm not taking sides. But one of the issues is that when these fires occurred in the past, there was something called a back burner or a backfire. In other words, you light a fire which becomes a break, and therefore it can't spread. Yes. So you create, and apparently the Greenies or the would not allow this to happen. So I think there was a bit of a reaction, and now it's out of control. So there is a political issue around it, which I don't want to get involved with. And in fact, I'm not even sure that I'm giving the right kind of comment on it or scenario. But I know that there are issues about you know how they used to stop this in the past. But this climate change is a massive issue here. And very, very sensitive because, you know, we know Australia is a big coal producer, but there's a huge backlash now against, further coal production and expanding that area. And I don't know what the consequences are. I'm just finding these things out in conversation, and I haven't been here all that time. But, I mean, there are a lot of issues around this. I was discussing with my brother this time, around the various parties, between Labour and Liberals and their various views. And climate change is one of the massive subjects and very sensitive in Australia. So I think this is what got Turnbull kicked out of the Labour Party, the Liberal Party, was that he was the Liberal Party is quite conservative in their views, and particularly because of their base in Queensland, where the coal miners are. And apparently, old Turnbull was shifting more from centre right to centre left, and I think that caused a lot of issues with him, being made him very unpopular. So those are it's a very sensitive issue here in Australia, far more than anything we experience in South Africa or certainly even in Europe.
Are you a climate change embracer or denialist?
No, I'm embracing it. I embrace it in that I think it's the right way to do things. But
you believe there is climate change? Because I spoke to somebody the other day, a very, very clever fellow, and I sent him a tweet and I said, we were about to conduct a podcast, and I said, do you want to talk about climate change? And he says, define climate change. I'm not afraid of CO2. I mean, I can't understand that. No. Look at the graphs. No. Look at the statistics. No. I don't understand how anyone can say that.
Where I take a stand is that I agree with messing up the environment. You know, whether it's the forests in South America, they might have their case that they have to earn a living, and if you want us not to do this, then compensate us. But I think that globally there is a responsibility to live clean and not to mess with the environment. I can't give you the results. I can't answer scientific questions on it, but all that I do believe is that it's the right way to behave, and it's the right way to listen. You're Cape Townian, so I take it even a step further. When I see something that's ugly, like those three salt cylinders that sit below Table Mountain, those are the kind of things that offend me. So yes. I take it to extremes. It's not only the natural environment. Sometimes it's the way we mess cities. And even if you look at Cape Town, so I take a strong stand. The way that they've chipped into the mountains and, to build houses for some very rich people. So that's my sentiments. It goes beyond, it's just beyond what we're doing to the natural environment. It's what which I suppose that is, that fits within that category. Have you seen, why do you need to chip away at rock that has been there for billions of years to build houses? So I know, yes.
That's because you're an artist, David. I mean, you're not a frustrated artist. You are an artist. Apart from being an expert in financial services for decades, the fact is that you are an artist, and that is coming out in what you've just said.
So I'm saying that's, from me, just leave the environment, don't mess with it, etc. And for us to, I used to fly. I mean, I saw them what happened to Johannesburg with the gold mines, and I know that at that stage that was progress, and that gave us the foundation for where South Africa is today. But you don't want to see that reoccur. You never want to see that. And look at what's happened to the slime dams in South America, Vale and places like that. So. I'm very conscious of the way that man behaves towards the environment.
Very good. What about man behaving towards whoever is going to lead the United Kingdom? Because the polling stations are open now, and the general election 2019, the third in 5 years, has just begun, and people are voting. And I just think that there could be a surprise here. I mean, I don't know if the POMs, I mean, you're in Australia, so I can call them POMs. Mm. I don't know if the POMs are that fired up about it, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's going to be a surprise. We had a Brexit surprise. We had a Trump surprise. Maybe there's going to be a surprise here. Maybe, and please, this is my hope, whoever gets in or whatever result there is means that Brexit is not going to happen, because this election is a defining moment in the UK's history.
And how I was reading The Economist, who actually went for the Lib Dems,
yes,
and said that they represent the way to go. They wanted neither party to win. You know, they found that I don't know how they – I wish I had it in front of me now, but they summed it up beautifully.
The problem is, David, sorry to interrupt, because I have to, because otherwise I'll forget my point. I said exactly the same thing yesterday. I would vote for the Lib Dems if it weren't for the fact that Swinson, their leader, is so inexperienced and looks so out of place. If she was a little bit more experienced, if she was a little bit more domineering, if she was a little bit more forceful and articulate and erudite, I would definitely vote for the Lib Dems, because the other two are both unpalatable.
Well, I think that's exactly how they put it, and they actually encourage people to vote that way. So I don't know how it's going to end up, but I think whichever way it goes, I think for the British economy it's going to be very difficult, and a hard Brexit. I understand what you mean by hard Brexit. I think it's going to have severe consequences. Lindsay, you know, at the end they'll come through it, but I like to look at global investing, and to be honest, the companies that we might invest in the UK are not really affected by trade in the US, or by, you know, they don't rely on the US, they're international companies. So from that point of view, I think we'll just get on with it. But I think in the UK, it's going to be, we're in for a very, very difficult time. I'm not enthralled by either of them.
No.
I don't know enough about them to argue with you, but I'm just saying the little I know, I also feel very disillusioned by where the UK could go. And is this the best we could produce? You know, and I think we're asking that question globally. Is this the best we've got? You know. Anyway.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Anyway, back to South Africa.
As long as they don't mess up with soccer and the import of players, you know.
Oh no, they must never do that.
No, you know, that's what I'm saying.
That would be disastrous. I can remember in the old days when Ozzy Ardiles and what was his name, Ricardo Villa, came to Tottenham, and you were allowed two players to come in, and then Ipswich did the same thing. They had Arnold Buren and Frans Tyson coming in from Holland. Bobby Robson, the great visionary, brought in, and you were allowed two players. But don't mess around with that, please. I mean, that's part of the British DNA. Anyway,
that's my biggest problem.
Yeah, I get lots of tweets about us talking about football and these rugby players, and these rugby fans really hate us for that. But anyway, Merry Christmas to them. David, it's been a rotten year on the JSE, hasn't it? And in the South African boardroom.
Yeah. It has. What saved the JSE, and I think at the end it depends how you measure it, whether you measure total return. I don't always look at total return, because that includes dividend. I always say, what was the price at the beginning of the year? What's the price at the end of the year? Because that's how we measure things, you know, in broking terms. You know, what did I buy it at? What did I sell it at? Forget about the dividends along the way. Of course, that is a benefit, but it'll be a 5% gain for the JSE, maybe at the end of the year, maybe 6%. Compare that with the US's 20% and above. But I think underneath that, if it wasn't for gold and platinum shares and a few miners, it would have been an absolute disaster year. And I think the Rand, we also saw a slight recovery in some of the shares like Richemont and British American Tobacco, you know, from very low basis. But I mean, if you look at SA Inc., it's been a disaster. I was going through the, you know, we're evening now, but this morning I was going through some of the, you know, what's happened over the year. And when I look at the destruction that's taken place in retail shares, It's been a very, very awful year for SA Inc. That would include, I think, industrial shares, things like Udeka, Invicta, companies like that have been destroyed. The construction industry has been destroyed. You know, I can't use words hard enough. I mean, the numbers that we've written down have matched any of the worst slumps that we've seen in the time that I've been on the market. But it has been masked by, you know, by gains in some of the mining shares. So I think, but for people who are invested in mid caps and small caps, and it's been very, very difficult year, Lindsay.
It really has. And looking forward to 2020, because I'm not going to bother you again when you're on your family holiday in Australia. Looking forward to 2020, I'm still hearing the same drum being beaten by certain fund managers saying 2020 is going to be a good year. There's lots of value out there. Yes, there is lots of value out there, but the value can become even more valuable during the 2020 period, if you see what I mean.
I agree with you. I don't think this is going to be a quick turnaround in the economy. I think the economy is going to battle. And I spoke to you this, you know, I think last week I've spoken to you about this before. I think what happens is the companies have managed to keep profits alive by cutting costs and cutting back on capex or maintenance issues, you know, which are necessary to keep companies going. But third year into this, it starts to tell. You know, we need the revenue line, and I don't think we're going to get it. So I would rather err on the side of caution. I don't think this is a turnaround. We've got the weight of money, you know, which is always an issue because pension funds, you know, people still working, they contribute to the pension funds, money finds its way into institutions, and that can support the market. But I don't know for how long. You know, the signs that I've seen worry me a lot. And I think, if anything, we might just maintain where we are. So while I'm not that negative on global markets, I think we'll do okay. Corporate profits will pick up. I can't say the same thing about South Africa. I just don't see it. I see consumers under enormous pressure, and I see business confidence does continue to plunge. And when we have situations like SAA and Eskom, there's no quick fix to this.
David, thank you very much for your time. Thanks for taking time out from your family holiday. That's David Shapiro, who's the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg, speaking to us from Sydney, Australia. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox.